The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host. It's Saturday, August 29th, 2009, and I'm extremely happy to be with you this morning. Special good morning to my friends in Florida listening on the Eagle 104.3 FM. And good morning to my friends listening on the web at www.lwrn.net. That's the acronym for Liberty Works Radio Network, lwrn.net. Well, given the many blessings bestowed on our country, I dedicate every show to our Father in Heaven. So we'll start the show by praying as Jesus instructed us in Matthew chapter 6. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. Well, as many of you are probably well aware, our country is in deep trouble, and I urge everyone to fervently pray for God's blessings on our country, and I ask you to redouble your efforts to obey His commandments. Let's redouble all of our efforts to obey His commandments, especially refraining from taking the Lord's name in vain. I'm coming to you live, courtesy of Liberty Works Radio Network. The name of this network is Liberty Works, and we all know that liberty does work. We really need your help to keep Liberty Works Radio on the air, so I would ask you to visit lwrn.net and click on Join Donate to see how you can help the network. It doesn't take big donations or even frequent ones, just whatever you can afford. Would certainly be helpful. I always encourage my listeners to have a pen and paper handy so that you can copy down important information that we always hope to provide on the show. For those who are new to the show, I'm a former IRS Criminal Investigation Division special agent. I no longer work for the IRS, because during the last 2 years of my service at the IRS, I investigated claims and research that others had made about the legality of IRS administration and enforcement of the federal income tax system. And then I concluded, ultimately concluded, those claims that they made about the federal income tax, namely that the tax laws as passed by the U.S. Congress did not require most Americans to file federal income tax returns and pay federal income tax, were true. Coming to this conclusion obviously caused my IRS career to end rather abruptly in 1999, and I've been speaking about my experiences and conclusions regarding the federal income tax and other liberty-related matters ever since. I'm featured in a movie called America: Freedom to Fascism, which I highly recommend you watch as soon as possible. You can go to your nearest trusty search engine and type in the words America Freedom to Fascism. Fascism is spelled F-A-S-C-I-S-M. Or you can go to freedomtofascism.com and get some links there on how to get the movie. Well, generous member of the Front Sight Firearms Training Institute has offered to fill open slots for an upcoming 4-day practical rifle training class at the Front Sight Firearms Training Institute, which is located in Pahrump, Nevada. That's kind of northwest of Las Vegas. And I've announced this a couple times before in the show. We have till September 11th to, that's the final deadline for signing up for this class. But the member has suggested the following arrangement, subject to class size considerations. Any person who'd be willing to donate $200 of financial support to this Freedom Above Fortune radio show will receive a formal invitation to participate in a 4-day practical rifle training class at the Front Sight Firearms Training Facility, which, as I said, is located in Pahrump, Nevada. Invitees would be responsible for their own travel, lodging, ammunition expenses, and you'd have to either bring your own rifle or rent one there at the facility, and they charge $100 for a 4-day rental. I believe they routinely rent AR-15 rifles. That's the kind of rifle that you would rent for the class. You can go to frontsight.com to see how the facility operates. That's front, F-R-O-N-T, sight, S-I-G-H-T, all one word, frontsight.com. The class is going to be from Friday, September 25th through Monday, September 28th. It's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I'll be participating in the class myself with my two sons, at least, God willing, if we can get there in one piece. And we really enjoy the opportunity to spend time with anyone who'd like to join the class. If you'd like to actually join the class, or at least look into it, you can go to josephbannister.com. That's my website, or my personal website, J-O-S-E-P-H-B-A-N-I-S-T-E-R, only one N in Bannister, josephbannister.com. Click on the Contact Us menu item, and you can send me an email and put rifle class in the subject box so that we know that that's what you're interested in. You can tell us a little bit about yourself and indicate your commitment to attend the class, and then serious inquiries will receive further instructions. So when the class is full, it's full, so please don't delay. You have a little over, almost 2 weeks left before the deadline. Well, my guest this morning is attorney Tom Cryer, and I'm hoping to spend, who knows how it'll go. We're flexible. Tom's a talk show host, too. But we're going to try to spend the first hour or so talking about Tom's amazing story about how someone challenged him to read the actual federal income tax laws for himself and how doing so changed his life forever. So, and in the second hour, we hope to talk about the Florida Motor March. I think it's going to be called, or is called, Free Florida Motor March. And that's coming up at the end of October, beginning of November. It's going to be, I think, about a 2-week event. I'm going to try to participate in that myself, but there's going to be, it's going to be huge. We just need all the Floridians to come out in droves, and you're going to learn a whole lot. So, Tom, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Welcome.
Always glad to visit with you, Joe. Don't get to see you enough.
I appreciate that, and I enjoy seeing you, too. Well, Tom, maybe just briefly, just in case there's listeners who can't join us for the second hour, maybe just give a brief thumbnail of the Florida March, just as far as where people can go for more information, and then we'll concentrate on your story for the first hour. But, just in case somebody can't listen the second hour, just give them, 15 seconds of what's going on and then just where they can go for more information, then we'd like to get right into your story.
Well, we're going to be conducting Tea Party rallies and citizenry, I call it, the lost art of wielding the power of an American citizen. We've lost that power. But we'll be conducting seminars reviving that lost art all across the state of Florida, all around it. It'll be a 2-week event. We call it Tea Party Squared, because, you know, it's an exponential development of the next level. Our next level after that is already on the drawing board, called Tea Party Q, but that'll come later. But we're going to start in Pensacola. We're going to go all the way down the Gulf Coast. We're going to jump over to Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and then go up to the top and end up at the fort at San Augustine for what we call the finale rally. And that's where all of these tea parties and all of these seminar attendants, we hope, will gather for a statewide tea party. This is where we're bringing it up to, instead of local. It will be a state event. And we are going to have some fantastic speakers there. And we're going to have, in all the seminars, we're going to have materials that they can take home that will give them everything that they need to do what citizens used to do, that we just kind of delegated and kind of drifted away from being in the habit of governing our government. And so that's we're really excited about it. People can find out more. Right now there's a tentative itinerary. It's not quite final. It will be final this week. But there's a tentative itinerary and an overview at teapartysquared.com. That's all in one word, teapartysquared.com. We have to spell out the squared because you can't put a superscript in an URL, or at least I haven't figured out how to do that yet. So, you know, you spell out the squared. It's not a superscript to or an exponent. But we're excited about it, Joe. And I just got back from a week. I spent a little over a week, actually, down in Florida, going over and through all these towns and meeting with local Tea Party organizers and local activists. And I'll tell you, the reception that this thing has, they're wide-eyed, and they are just excited as the dickens about this. They think that this is, you know, they've all gotten right behind it, and they're pushing, and they're going to really promote and really encourage everyone to come out and make a lot of noise so that we can wake a sleeping giant.
That's fantastic. Okay, well, great. So at least
that's a little more than 15 seconds.
That's all right. Well, you're
ask a lawyer a question, he can't answer in 15 seconds. He can't give you his phone number in 15 seconds.
Yeah, and you're bleeding into your own time. But, yeah, I think that's good that you gave people a good little thumbnail. We can jump back into it as far as how the preparations are going in the second hour. We only have, looks like less than 2 minutes before the break comes. I don't think you're able to hear the music, so I'm going to have to just rudely jump in when I can see that it's time to go. So in about a minute or two, why don't you just get started letting people know why you're on the radio with me and how your life changed. But again, watch out for me to just jump right in and say we're going to a break.
Okay, and I'll be watching the clock. You know, I've got a program on Liberty Works Radio Network as well between 5 and 6 Eastern. Called the Truth Attack Hour, Monday through Friday, and so I'll be watching. I've got the clock up, and I'll try to not walk over that break. You know, it all started, Joe. I guess back in about '93, I went to lunch with a former law partner of mine, and the subject of taxes came up, you know, as it often does. And he tells me, you know, well, he doesn't have that problem because he doesn't file. And I said, why? You know, he said, well, no, I don't file tax returns. And I said, you know, you got some sort of, you know, I thought maybe he was going into self-destruct mode. And he says, no, he says, I'm not required to file because I'm not liable. Only those liable have to file a tax return. I said, well, yeah. I said, but everybody's liable. And he says, well, no, it isn't. There's no provision in the code that makes me liable for the income tax. And I knew it was there. It had to be there. I had written tax laws before. And to tell people 3 things. 1, what the tax is on. 2, how much it is. And 3, most importantly, who is liable. And I know we've got to run right smack into a break here, but I guess that's a good place to stop. It's because at that point I thought that he'd run mad, and I looked at it, and I reached over across the table, and I felt that as far as he was, one of the
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Persistence. Pass it on. Some people would call him a loser. He ran for state office. He was beaten. He started a business. He failed. He ran for Congress. He lost. He was nominated for Vice President Abraham Lincoln. He lost again. But he knew only those who never try are the real losers. Persistence. Pass it on.
America. Born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Radio Network.
It's the truth that no one else will say on the radio.
The philosophy of Barack Obama is predicated on one simple notion, and that's that it's okay to take from one person to give to another.
It's okay to take from one person to give to another.
He's the evil conservative saying what America's thinking.
Barney Frank, Tim Geithner, Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid. I want to know who's controlling these Muppets. Who's controlling these Muppets?
Truth to power.
It's the truth that no one else will say on the radio.
Only one man can do it. The evil conservative.
Listen, it'd be really easy to get rid of all the questions. Just show us the birth certificate.
He's the evil conservative.
Listen, sometimes somebody just has to say, it's an ugly baby.
Get it right. Yes, the evil truth.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom of Both Fortune radio show.
Our guest is attorney Tom Cryer, and we spent the first little segment there a brief talk about the Florida Motor March. It's coming up at the end of October. But we've jumped right into Tom's amazing story, how his life changed forever, starting in 1993 when he met with his law partner. And his law partner, another lawyer, said, hey, I'm not liable for the federal income tax, and I don't file tax returns. And when Tom got up off the floor after that amazing revelation, started to look into it. So anyway, Tom, go right back to it. We got a full 13 or 14 minutes.
Well, you know, I probably could not tell you, Joe, about any lunch I had in 1993, except for that one. It was at the Piccadilly. I remember exactly where we were sitting. And I guess whenever an event like that hits you and your life totally does a 270 and spins off, you know, into a completely different direction, that makes it a memorable luncheon. But I remember clearly making fun of him. Actually, you know, saying, yeah, right, I thought I was waiting for a punchline. And the guy was serious. Well, to make a long story short, I told him, you know, this was a friend of mine. This was a former law partner of mine. This is a colleague of mine, a fellow attorney of mine. And I didn't want him to come into harm's way. I didn't want him to be, you know, messed up. And then the government will mess you up if you don't do what they tell you to. And so I told him, I said, tell you what, George, I'll go find that liability provision for you because it has to be there. It's impossible for all of these high-powered, you know, big-dollar tax specialists and CPAs to have missed that, because it's the first thing that a lawyer would look for. You know, it would be right there at the beginning of the code. So he just apparently just missed it. So I, next opportunity I had, I stopped by the library because I don't carry a federal set in my my personal law library. And we didn't have internet back then. Al Gore, I guess, had not gotten around to inventing it for us, along with his invention of global warming. And, you know, what a creep. I'm sorry, but we won't get off on that. But, you know, I stopped over at the library, and I figured it would take me about 5 minutes. The liability provision should be one of the very first. I expected to find an imposition. I expected to find rates, and I expected to find shortly or immediately thereafter a section defining exactly what some person is liable for the tax. Well, the first segment of the tax code, sure enough, was determination of liability. So there it is, right there. That's the first subchapter. And so I looked at section 1, and it says that there's hereby imposed on the taxable income of every married individual, yada yada, and the surviving spouse, filing jointly, a tax in the amount of so-and-so. But it didn't say who was liable. And so I went to the next one. It didn't say who was liable either. Went to the next and the next. I went through that chapter real quick. It took me about 30 minutes to see that there was no liability provision there, but it had to be somewhere else. If it's not there, then it's somewhere else, but it had to be there. After going back to the library another time, and then because the library's copy of the code was an annotated version, so it was spread out over about 15 volumes and hard to go from section to section, I ordered my own copy of the Internal Revenue Code, and I went through that entire subtitle A, and I only found one liability provision that was clear and specific, and that was section 1461. And 1461 said that anyone required to withhold taxes under this subchapter, or this chapter, shall be liable for the payment of the tax. But that was only withholding agents for non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. Now, we can go into a much broader discussion of the thing, because I also had noticed the first time I picked up the code that it was using the word individual, which is foreign to lawyers. We use the word person or entity or what have you, but we never use the word individual, because that's a word that can be used as a noun or an adjective, or, you know, in other words, it could be unclear. But they use the word individual. I thought that struck me as odd. But right off the bat, it just didn't seem right. And so I went through not only subtitle A, but I ended up reading the entire Internal Revenue Code. It's a wonder I'm not blind, because the only way that I could know for sure that it wasn't there is to be able to say, I read every section. And so I read every section, every paragraph, every phrase, every word. And it wasn't there. Now this, I don't know how you felt whenever you finally came to terms with your research, because you were sort of challenged in the same manner, maybe a little bit different circumstances, but basically you were challenged to debunk. Both of us, you and I, were both setting out not to defeat or expose a gap in the income tax law. We were both setting out to debunk these claims. And both of us had to come to the same conclusion when we read the law. But I was not a happy camper at that point. How did you feel whenever you got that? I was really depressed. I was a mixture of angry. I was a mixture of disappointed. I was a mixture of disgusted. I was a mixture of, my attitude, my trust toward, the whole tax segment of the bar, the courts, the Congress, the IRS, it just soured.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's kind of, when you compare the various disappointing or most emotionally difficult times of your life, like in my life, my father passing away, or just very sad and disappointing times, and this one ranks right up there. It's not something that you jump for joy, you know, because it's not what you're expecting to find, but yet your own intellect, your own training, you know, your own experience, you know that it is the truth. It's just that, you know, you get exposed to it, and then you've got that other feeling, which is, okay, well, wow, what do I do now?
Well, you know, I went on ahead, and I, that what do I do now is the big issue, because you and I both had also something else in common. We had both sworn a solemn oath to support the law, not the government, but to support the law, and to defend it. And as a matter of fact, not only as an attorney did I take that oath, but also as an officer in the United States Army, I swore to die for it if I had to. And to defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic, Constitution and the laws of the United States. So, you know exactly the kind of dilemma that I found myself in. Do I, you know, walk up and defy and challenge not an 800-pound gorilla, but a Godzilla? You know, a 50-ton Godzilla, fire-breathing, talons, fangs, the whole nine yards, and challenge it with the truth? Or do I sit back and pretend I didn't find out what I found out? And I thought about this. I prayed about it. I asked for some help. I didn't get it. You know, he puts us here to make our own decisions. Or maybe I did, and I didn't realize it. I don't know. But to me, I only had one choice. I didn't have any choice but to stand up and say, hey, you guys are violating the law. You guys are taking money you're not entitled to. You guys are imposing a burden on people that you're not entitled to impose. And I started refusing to file any income tax return unless and until the federal government could demonstrate to me that there was some legal basis for their demand that I do so. And that caused me a lot of grief over a long period of time. And it caused me a lot of trouble. But I think I'd have been more troubled if I had just pulled the covers over my head and violated my oath and shirked my duty, not only as an attorney or as an officer, because once an officer, always an officer. My oath goes till I'm 64. I've got 4 years left I can be recalled. But there's no date, no stamp on my oath. I'm bound by that. And so I didn't see a choice. I had to do it. And it's been quite a ride ever since.
I didn't realize that the oath was, actually put a timeline on it.
The oath does not have a time stamp on it, but under tradition, an officer can be called back into duty, called back into active duty, through the age 64.
I see.
But even then, the obligation to support and defend the Constitution and laws of the United States continues. It does not stop at 64. I corrected myself or tried to, maybe not effectively.
No, I understand your point. I mean, the bottom line is that people who have never taken the oath don't understand just how important it is. I mean, Article 6 of the Constitution requires that the oath be administered. And, of course, I think the vast majority of people take the oath to God. And it's a big deal. It's a huge deal. And there's a number of people that realize that.
It is to you, I know, and it is to me. And like I tell people, I didn't swear that oath to my second cousin.
Exactly.
I mean, do you want to answer to trouble here? Do you want to answer for eternity? I mean, that just, that's how serious I take it. A commitment's a commitment.
So once you started to look into the actual laws, and I, you remind people. I mean, we're talking to an attorney here, and he had the training. The state of Louisiana thought that you were competent enough, right? They issued you a bar card, you passed the bar exam, you had decades of experience with the law, with trials, with evidence. You even wrote laws, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, even more than just admit me to the bar, when I graduated from law school, I graduated with honors, right up in the top echelon of the class. I was inducted in the Order of the Croix, which is the highest scholastic honor anybody, any lawyer can receive. After only 14 years of practice, I was inducted into the LSU Law School Hall of Fame due to the fact that I had advocated cases improving and changing the law on so many occasions when many lawyers never get or at least never recognize the opportunity to do that. But, I had at that point 25 years of trial practice under my belt. I was and always have been the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and I'm by myself feeling like a champ next to a monster.
Looks like we've got a break coming up, Tom. So, I hope everyone will continue to join us with our guest, Attorney Tom Cryer, as he explains how his life changed forever after looking at the tax laws. We'll be right back in a couple minutes.
Born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
She knows a hollow from a double up. She does snapbacks, backsides, shoots the curl. Bethany Hamilton knows everything about surfing. She just didn't know about the shark. But just months after the attack, and with only one arm, the 13-year-old surfs again. And now she's ripping it better than ever. So next time life puts a little fear in you, just think of Bethany Hamilton hanging 10 on top of a heavy wave. That's real courage. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
The American dream was given birth by Samuel Adams, the father of the American Revolution. The right to freedom, being the gift of God. It is not in the power of man to alienate this gift and voluntarily become a slave. If ye love wealth better than liberty, the tranquility of servitude better than the animating contest of freedom, go home from us in peace. We ask not your counsels or your arms. Crouch down and lick the hands which feed you. Thomas Jefferson wrote to Sam the following tribute. You have proved that it was monarchy, and not merely British monarchy, you opposed. Samuel Adams was not only a son of liberty, he was the father of the American Revolution. For his was the American dream.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in front.
On Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show.
My guest this morning is Attorney Tom Cryer, and he's telling the incredible story about how he, for many years, approximately 25 years of legal practice, and he's looking at all kinds of laws over those 25 years, but never really dove into the federal income tax laws until his former law partners thought he might need to take a look. And so he did actually protect his friend, because he thought his friend might have blown a gasket and gone off the deep end, whatever phrase you can use to describe that. So Tom looked into it and, of course, applied his two decades and a half of legal training and experience into the search, and was amazed at what he found. I spoke in the previous segment about not being able to find a liability statute for the average American. He did find one for withholding from foreign corporations and non-resident aliens. I don't know why it didn't come to me. So anyway, Tom, go ahead and continue with this fascinating story about how your eyes were opened by your own legal research.
Well, you know, it comes under the no good deed goes unpunished department, because now I'm in this dilemma and I don't really see a choice other than to make good on my promise to uphold the Constitution and the law. But I had to know why. It is so simple. I mean, I used to draft, I drafted tax laws. My first job out of law school was a special advisor in harassment for the Louisiana Constitutional Convention. Taxes was one of my segments of, you know, of responsibility. Right after I got indicted, I got a paragraph a lady sent me. He said, I thought you might want to read this. And I read it, and I knew exactly what it was. It was the first paragraph of the Louisiana Constitution. It defined the purpose of government. And I recognized it because I'd written it 30 years earlier. And so, I mean, I'm familiar with how laws are supposed to be drawn. But why don't they just do it? Why don't they just put why they leave that out? That's too glaring. I went and I looked at other taxes to see if maybe it's federal practice or whatever it is unique that they just presume or whatnot liability or assume it or infer it. All of the other taxes start out with an imposition statute, just like all state taxes do, and they're followed immediately by a provision stating exactly who is liable. Every single one of them. So you have Section 5001, it imposes a tax on distilled spirits. Well, there are distilled spirits all over the place. You may have some in your home. Probably not, but I have some in mine. And do I owe a tax on those? No, because there's no law making me liable for that. The 5005, just a few sections later, says that the importer or distiller shall be liable for the payment of the distilled spirits tax, period. And they can't get clearer than that. So, you know, I went back and I started looking back at all the tax laws, the history of it. I went back and read all the tax acts. I read all the regs. I went back and went into the constitutional aspects of it to find out, well, what is it here? And I learned some shocking things. I mean, learned some things that I was not taught in law school, for one thing. I double-checked to make sure I was interpreting it properly, because I was interpreting it by the letter, what we call, lawyers call strict construction, strict interpretation. And sure enough, the Supreme Court has made it clear, all tax laws, and being a derogation of rights to property, must be strictly construed. And they even said in one case that even if Congress meant to make someone liable, if they didn't make him liable in the letter of the law, he's not liable for the tax, doesn't owe it. So I went back and studied history. I went all the way back to 13th century Holland, where the excise tax originated. I came all the way back forward, Magna Carta, you name it, everything coming back forward, and all the way up to present. And the history of taxation in this country and all the cases involving it. And I learned several really shocking things that just never occurred to me. One is that the federal government was never intended and was not allowed to impose a mandatory tax on any citizen. Now, you know, I didn't realize that because none of that was covered in the constitutional courses I took in law school. And I was not just number one. I was number one, two, three, and four because of the white one under me was in fifth place. It was such a big gap. Not literally, but I mean figuratively. I was way ahead of the second place guy in constitutional law scores. So, I mean, it wasn't like I missed something. They just didn't teach it. I also was shocked to find out the 16th Amendment did not authorize the income tax. The income tax had been around before. They already had a right to tax incomes, provided that the activity that generated the income was one that the federal government was allowed to tax in the first place. That taxing income is only a measure of the tax on the activity, not the income. But the 16th Amendment gave Congress no new power. I'd always been told that the 16th Amendment is what gave Congress the power to impose an income tax on us, but it didn't. And, you know, the case, if somebody wants to look it up or check it out on the Truth Attack website, in the law library or in the resources segment, can do that at truthattack.org. And go to the law library or click on resources. There's a lot of good stuff in there that explains all this. But then I realized that I found out that one of the basic fundamental rights that we have as Americans is that we have the right to earn a living through our own labor. Just like we have a right to freedom of speech, we have a right to worship as we choose or not to. We have a right to do an awful lot of things, to peaceably assemble. We have a right to due process. These are fundamental rights. Well, another one that they don't tell us about in civics class is this right to earn a living through our own labor. So if we're exercising a right, they can't be taxed. So that isn't one of those activities that the federal government can tax. Another shocking development that I found, and the more I went, the deeper I dug, the more I realized, hey, boy, we have been off course here. All of us, we've just been blinded. We've been under a mass hypnosis, and somehow or another, and, you know, something came along and touched me and said, you're no longer hypnotized, find the truth. And another was is that whenever we work for a living and we're paid wages or salaries, that is not income. That income doesn't mean what comes in the way we've always been taught. That income means only the profit or the gain. Well, how much of your wages or profit? You gave up a part of your life. You gave up part of your work life. You depleted your work life. All of us start with so many years and no more. We don't know how many there are, but we do know that they're finite and that they can be yet more depleted over the passage of time. And we're giving up our energy, we're giving up our expertise and our skills and our experience and our talents for the benefit of another. So we're giving up capital, our human capital, in exchange for those wages. So it can't be 100% profit the way that the government says. I also found that there's no basis in law for this zero basis position that the IRS holds on personal earnings. There's no legal basis for it. And the reason that they have a zero basis, which means that, in other words, whatever you're paid for a week's work, that's 100% profit. You're being paid for nothing. Zero, nada. You didn't contribute anything to this transaction. It's like it's just manna from heaven that your paycheck gets there, whether you work or not. Well, if you don't work, you don't get a paycheck. So that tells you right there that there's no legal basis whatsoever for it. But they have to have it zero, because if they don't say it's zero, then what is it? You can't say what part of your wages represent what you gave up to receive them, the expense out of your lifetime, out of your energy, out of your labor. The Supreme Court held that your labor is your most precious and inviolable of properties, because it is a property from which all wealth derives. And the right to trade that labor in commerce to make a living for yourself and your family is part of the right to the pursuit of happiness. I didn't know all of this stuff. Why wasn't I taught this? But your rights are exempt from taxation. The case of Grosjean, right of the American Press, right out of my hometown, Lake Charles, Louisiana, was the landmark case that held that no, you cannot tax the exercise of a right, because the power to tax is the power to destroy. And if I can destroy your rights, you don't have any rights, because you only have what I say you have. If it's a right, what I say shouldn't have anything to do with it, should it, Joe?
That's absolutely right. I mean, and I,
you know, so,
there's a perfect example of where, you know, the IRS will claim that people have these frivolous arguments, and, you know, occasionally that might be the case. But here, talk about something that has no basis in fact or law, the zero basis position that you described.
That is a frivolous argument, isn't it?
It is one they won't admit to, but, you know, but using their own standards, you know, and legal standards, it obviously is. Yeah.
But if you say that your wages were at the expense of your capital, they'll tell you that that's a frivolous argument. But if you look in the list of frivolous arguments, where they post those on their website, you will not find the absence of any legal basis for the zero basis rule. And that, so apparently it isn't frivolous, because they say they list all frivolous arguments there. You also won't find the absence of a liability provision. And you also will not find the tax-exempt nature of the exercise of a right. The tax isn't on the income. If it was, that would be a property tax, because that income is your property. And in Stan V. Bolting Mining, the Supreme Court made it very clear, the tax is not on the income itself. It's only measured in income. The tax is on the activity that you engaged in to receive that income. And that income is only the profit. Suppose they decided, well, we're going to tax Walmart on everything that comes into its cash register. Walmart would be stopped stamping out toys and start stamping out tanks. They wouldn't put up with that. They only pay on 1% or 2% of what comes in the door. But the guy sitting at the door, greeting these people, they're hitting him for taxes on 100% of what he receives, even though he gave up part of his life to receive it.
And that's right there is the comparison that any IRS revenue agent who, you know, my knowledge of their educational requirements and training requirements, they are, you know, decent accountants. They've had a decent amount of accounting training. And that comparison right there about how Walmart, you know, will pay the tax, whether or not, you know, they're paying something that's required is another issue. But they're paying, you know, 1% or 2% of retail profit on what they bring in. And yet the poor guy or gal that's there greeting the customer or checking out and working 8 or 10 hours a day is charged on 100% of what comes in.
That's right. That's right. It's just it's an abomination. So no pun intended here.
Well, we got a break coming up. This is the top of the first hour. Our guest is attorney Tom Cryer. If you're on the internet, you can check out truthattack.org while we're on the break. And we're going to come back the next hour, continue with Tom's story, and talk about the Florida Motor March that's coming up. So all you Floridians, get ready. Here it comes.
Join the cavalcade to freedom, the cavalcade back to constitutional government. Climb on board and do your part to proclaiming liberty throughout the land. Join and support Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. To view the strategic plan, to spread the word, and to get information on joining, go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com or call the fellowship office at 410-857-5444. That's 410-857-5444. To join the cavalcade to freedom. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Liberty Works Radio Network. Enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic. Helping you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation. Please Do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details. Liberty Works Radio, truth in broadcasting.
I pledge allegiance to the Constitution of the American States United and to the Republic which it created, implementing God's governmental plan for man, and asking His blessing for its adherence, which will provide liberty and justice for all.
The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. This is the second hour of the show. Many thanks to those who were joining us for the first hour. Greetings and welcome to those who are joining us for this hour. Our guest has been attorney Tom Crier. He's from the state of Louisiana, and he's an attorney from Louisiana. He's got 30 to 40 years worth of legal training and experience, been an attorney for that long, and he's been describing over the first hour basically
how his life changed once he learned the truth about the income tax laws, because he actually looked at them deeply for himself. He'd looked at many other laws, but never the income tax laws that deeply until a former law partner challenged him to do so. And really, out of protection for his former law partner, he engaged in a review of the income tax laws and came to a conclusion that he had not expected. So given the short time we have to have Tom on the show, Tom's going to fast forward to basically what the government did to him for having changed his mind about the federal income tax because of the research and the evidence that he accumulated. So, Tom, welcome back for the second hour, and why don't you tell the listeners how the government reacted, the IRS and the Department of Justice, to your new way of looking at the federal income tax laws?
Well, the first thing, of course, was the standard, we haven't received your tax returns, and we'd like to know this information. And I wrote them back and said, well, I don't know of any taxable income I've had or any taxable activities I've been engaging in. But if you do, let me know, and I'll be happy to fill out a return if I'm required. You just have to show me where I am. And by the way, you violated the law in the way you asked for this information, then I'll provide you any information that you lawfully request in a lawful manner. And that made them mad. That was insubordinate. I didn't realize it at the time. I was a little naive, and I did not realize that suggesting to an examination agent that she is obligated to follow the law was an insult. But it was. And so that we engaged in several years of wrangling. It moved up. She referred me finally to criminal investigations, which was your old department. And that guy came in and tried to intimidate. He accused me of being a tax protester, contrary to law. He filed summonses for records that he already had, which is against the law. When I filed a petition to quash those summonses, he violated the stay, which is against the law. He attempted to, through deception, fraud, telling people he had the power to grant immunity, persuade them to violate the stay along with him, which is against the law. He made disclosure of grand jury investigations. This is against the law. He made disclosure of my tax return information, as that's defined in the code, which is a crime, a felony, 58 counts that I found out about later. So this is the kind of game we're playing, is that the rules are all on me, but they have no rules. And it ultimately ended up in my indictment for two counts of evasion. And the evasion was based upon a trust that I created for my late wife, who at the time of, you know, that I created it was severely disabled. And I wanted to set aside some money that would be protected from her son, who was predatory and a profligate and had just absolute control over her. I mean, it was just, she couldn't tell him no. So he'd have had her pushing a shopping cart 2 weeks after I was gone. So they said I had income there and hid it whenever there was no income in that trust. Matter of fact, the trust lost money both years. And so somebody had to commit perjury for the grand jury, either over what they knew or what the facts were. And then we went to trial, and after a trial, or before the trial, I filed a motion based upon my findings that there was no liability provision applicable to me, and therefore there could be no tax responsibility on my part, that there was no requirement to file on my part for that very reason, that what I received was not income, and that the activity that I was engaging in, the practice of law, was outside of the taxing jurisdiction or taxing authority of the federal government, and therefore was not taxable income if it were income, and that what I received didn't meet the constitutional and legal definition of income, which is far more restrictive than what the IRS says, which is if it comes in, it's income. And yet they know that that's false. So, after a trial, the jury came back. On all my motions, the judge wouldn't even read them. He just denied them. And I can prove, I won't get into that because we don't have time, but I can't prove that he didn't read the motions or the memoranda. He just denied it. So I'm running into a situation where all the way starting from the examination agent through the CID agent, through the Department of Justice, the Assistant U.S. Attorney, the U.S. Attorney, and the judge are all knowingly violating the law and not, and covering for each other in the process. So we held a trial. Larry B. Kraft was my trial attorney. I was not allowed to introduce one single exhibit. You know, cases of Internal Revenue Service manual excerpts, regulations, statutes, all of those were held by the court to be tax protester materials. So the government's in the business of producing tax protester materials. And after the only thing I was allowed to do was to sit there and explain my position and what I believed my obligations were under the law. And the jury, realizing that I had a sound basis for those conclusions, came back after a very short deliberation, short enough to scare the dickens out of us, because short deliberations usually mean a conviction. And they returned not guilty verdicts on both counts. Now, in the meantime, I had learned about the tax honesty community. I didn't even know it existed. And what I found was a lot of different organizations and groups of people, many of whom are totally, you know, off in the wrong direction because they don't understand the law and they take it and extrapolate things and they end up with all these wild theories, which I later learned were probably originated by the government as a part of their disinformation and misdirection campaign, and it also to discredit the movement. So I decided that we needed to unify the tax honesty community, and I suggested to the leaders in this community that they do that and get behind a single cannot come back in tonight and start doing things in a more cooperative and coordinated fashion. And they all agreed that that's exactly what needed to happen, but none of them stepped up and said, I'll take it, I'll do it. So at that point, I was set for trial in 10 days, but I learned while I was there at that meeting, and you were at that meeting too, I recall you being there, Joe, that my trial had been continued for a couple of months. So I decided, well, if nobody else will step forward, it has to get done. So, you know, if it is to be, it's up to me. And so I went ahead and formed Truth Attack. And now that's an alliance that includes Freedom Above Fortune, your organization. And I'm proud to have that among our coalition. But many others, like Save a Patriot and ReWorks Radio Network and Freedom Law School, Free Enterprise Society, and Laptop America, and Granny Warriors. And, you know, in other words, it's growing, not just in the tax honesty community, but it's growing outside, and the entire freedom movement is starting to come on board, because Truth Attack is not just a tax organization, it's also, its objective is to put the government back in its box one tentacle at a time. But we're starting with the IRS tentacle, because that's the one that affects the most people. And it's also the one that the government uses to invoke fear and to make sheeple out of good citizens. And by eliminating the fear factor, once we get rid of the winged attack monkeys, we can then get to the wicked witch. And the wicked witch, you know, the IRS is merely the pawns and the attack monkeys, and the internal, the income tax is merely a siphon hose that the Fed and the owners of the Fed use to siphon off the wealth of America. And when you see how and follow the money, you realize what this is all about. And whenever you take into account the fact that in 1913, the 16th Amendment was purportedly ratified, the Federal Reserve Act was passed, the first income tax was passed, or the first income tax of which, of its current state, was passed. It wasn't the first income tax, it was the third. And so you have the Federal Reserve is given the power to control currency, you've got then the Internal Revenue Service that folded out, came out of that, it wasn't called that originally, but you've got the income tax, you've got the Federal Reserve, you've got the 16th Amendment, and you have the 17th Amendment, which stripped the states of all of their power in the Senate, was also purportedly ratified. All of those things happened in the same year. I don't think that's a coincidence, Joe. Do you?
Not one bit. It's amazing how forward-thinking these greedy, behind-the-scenes people are, and how they... I mean, I guess they must have hundreds, if not thousands, of years of experience, knowing how to do it, and it's all been nailed together real tight.
I would suggest to people, on the Truth Attack website, we have a store. We sell very little. We're not in business. We have a store, though, where people can buy bumper stickers and signs. But in that store is also a link to a number of books. And one of those books that I would recommend that people get is Edward Griffin's Jekyll, or Creature from Jekyll Island. And he tells the story of how these international bankers, which includes a lot of them that aren't American, who would love to see America fold up like a wet cardboard box because they hate us. But you got the Rothschilds from England, and you got the French Rothschilds. You got the Warburgs from Germany. And all these people, the Rockefellers, they all met in Jekyll Island in 1909, and they spent a week planning all of this and laying it out as to how they will eventually middle class had emerged in America, and they couldn't stand that. I mean, they're only used to having two classes of people, privileged and the unprivileged. And this middle class emerging in America, these were people that didn't know what they should do with that money. They shouldn't have that money. So we should take it away from them. They came up with a very, very effective way of doing just that.
Tom, we got a break coming up here. But that is fascinating, you know, and I hope you can continue with that history lesson, because people need to understand how, you know, like you said, the two classes are what the powers that be prefer. So anyway, we'll be back with our guest, Attorney Tom Cryer, truthattack.org. Thanks for joining us.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Norman Rockwell didn't create the best in us. He just inspired the best. You've seen the paintings. The Thanksgiving turkey being served at Grandma's. The weathered farmer sending his baby-faced son off to college.
Now be sure and write.
The wise police officer sitting at the soda bar, talking a young boy out of running away from home.
Where are you going?
Norman Rockwell didn't create the best in us. He just inspired the best. Inspiration. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It's the truth that no one else will say on the radio.
The philosophy of Barack Obama is predicated on one simple notion, and that's that it's okay to take from one person to give to another.
It's okay to take from one person to give to another.
He's the evil conservative saying what America's thinking.
Barney Frank, Tim Geithner, Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid. I want to know who's controlling these Muppets. Who's controlling these Muppets?
Truth to power.
It's the truth that no one else will say on the radio.
Only one man can do it. The evil conservative.
Listen, it'd be really easy to get rid of all the questions. Just show us the birth certificate.
He's the evil conservative.
Listen, sometimes somebody just has to say, it's an ugly baby.
Get it right. Yes, the evil truth. The evil conservative saying what America's thinking.
Weeknights at 10 on Liberty Works Radio Network, on Blind Talk Radio, and on Eagle 104.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host. I don't think I've mentioned this show, that you can go to freedomabovefortune.com for information about me. And I also have a mailing list, an email mailing list, if you'd like to join it to keep up with the latest information. Go to freedomabovefortune.com and go to the additional information menu item, and then within that additional information menu item, you'll see mailing list, and you can sign up if you like to receive future emails of guests that are going to come on the show, as well as follow-up information about past guests. So in other words, if you can join that mailing list this weekend, or hopefully today, then you'll get the information about our guest today, Tom Cryer. So our guest is Tom Cryer. He's an attorney from Louisiana. How many years do you have as being an attorney, Tom?
30 mumble years.
30 mumble years, so probably close to...
In October, it'll be 36 years.
36 years, so just an incredible amount of education and training, legal education and training. And for those that have been with the show... throughout since the beginning, Tom's been going through his sea change in his way he viewed the federal income tax, because he encountered the truth. I mean, facts, evidence, things that are truly incontrovertible. So the IRS has other ways of dealing with incontrovertible facts, like calling them frivolous or ignoring them or whatever. So Tom's been talking about that the second hour, you know, what they did personally to him, what they do to other people. So Tom, you know, again, you can launch for about 12, 13 minutes, and please just continue.
Well, you know, we were discussing at the break the formation of Truth Attack, and the Truth Attack is basically the offensive arm of the freedom movement. We want to consolidate not just the technology community, but the entire freedom movement, not to take it over, but to work for it, to line up behind one issue at a time. You know, we have a big task to do. Now, this is a big task that we have before us, about restoring our republic, then putting the government back in its box one tentacle at a time is the way to do it, because we can't fight the whole beast. It's too big. And we'll get bigger, and it will get smaller, and it'll get easier as it goes, but our first tentacle is, of course, the misapplication of the income tax to working Americans. It was never intended to include them. It was never intended. I had a guest on, Phil Hart, for a state representative from Idaho, wrote a book, Constitutional Income, Do You Have Any? I think you ought to get that book and read it. You should certainly read G.L. Griffin's Creature from Jekyll Island, which is available through, not at, but through the Truth Attack website in the store. There's a link to his book there. And not too long ago, I met with Edward Griffin at Jekyll Island, and we lunched together at in what they call the Federal Reserve Room, which was the room where the conspiracy occurred in 1909. They're proud of it. That is their claim to fame. This Jekyll Island Resort in Georgia, and they're just tickled pink that they were a part of this ignoble part of our history.
You know, even Jekyll Island is not far from Glencoe, Georgia, where the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center is, and that's where I spent 16 weeks training to be an IRS special agent. And so we would even go on the weekends over to Jekyll Island. So I didn't know at the time. We saw all the big mansions, and but you know, I just was uneducated about the Federal Reserve and the marriage between that and the federal income tax. But I remember actually going sailing there around Jekyll Island and seeing those big mansions. So little did I know that, you know, 3, 4, 5 years later, I would start to look into it and see the connection. So it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So here you were walking around the buried bodies and not realizing it.
Yeah.
You know? It is. It is amazing, and it's amazing that it's worked so well, and that the American public has just laid down and taken it. You know, that's what we started with this broadcast, talking about the fact that it's citizens. We have kind of just told the government, look, go ahead, you do your job. I'm busy. You just do good now, and we'll keep electing you. But do your job. But we didn't give them any adult supervision. And whenever you do that, then the kids are going to play. And boy, that has played right into the hands of the owners of the Fed, because it's given them a free rein. Well, we still have a leash on this dog's neck, and we still can, you know, jerk a knot in its tail and bring it to heel. But in order to do that, we're going to have to regain our skills as citizens. You know, American citizens, no matter where we went in the world, we were looked upon with respect because we governed the most powerful country in the world. We were all heads of state to these people because they knew that we were free, that we governed our government, not the other way around. And they looked at Americans with awe and respect, even if they didn't like us. Well, they don't do that anymore, and it's because we're not doing that anymore. We're not governing our government. We're complaining because it is, you know, not doing what we want. You know, we're complaining about it whenever, you know, we just, we're the ones that are letting it run amok. And so it's just, we've got to relearn, that's all. You know, we've been busy. We've been busy building this country. You know, essentially on, we started with virtually nothing 230 years ago. It was just, we're trying to scratch a living out of a wilderness. We're a country with no real military force to speak of, no real navy to speak of, and we're expanding, which is thinning us out. And in a short period of time, about a 100-year period, about 120 years, we became a world power. How in the heck did that happen? These other countries that we're now standing head and shoulders above have had hundreds and hundreds of years, in some cases thousands of years, to develop their strength, their wealth, their prosperity, and their footprint on the earth. And yet in only 100 or 120 years, this bunch of campers, you know, in huts and lean-tos, all of a sudden become the most powerful country in the world. What in the world did that? What did it, Joe, was that we were free to innovate. We were free to do things better. We were free to enjoy, keep, and reinvest the fruits of our labor and our ingenuity. We weren't bound by law or restraint or even convention. We were free to try different things. We were free to find a better way. And that better way and that ingenuity and that profit motive allowed the development of something very unique to the United States, and that was the middle class. There was no middle class until the United States came along. And that it allowed those in poverty, those people out there that are just chopping down trees and stacking them up into a cottage, to develop into ranchers and farmers and planters, and that with wealth, to generate wealth, to make new wealth. It allowed us to develop our resources in such a rapid and efficient way because we used competition and free enterprise as medium for our economy. And that allowed us to do better and to improve ourselves.
That allowed people to map out their own destiny. I mean,
absolutely.
Of course, with God's grace.
And we mapped pretty good, didn't we, Joe? Without government interference or without a nanny telling us what decisions we should make. And so, you know, that's what happened to America. Well, then, whenever this huge middle class possessing an incredible amount of wealth, because although we're not millionaires, when you add up the millions of us and look at the wealth that we represent, just look on the block on your street that you live on, how many millions of dollars worth of residents are there? Now, taking into account, of course, that those millions are inflated or diluted by the Federal Reserve, but still, look at the wealth that we have compared to the people of Europe. Look at the wealth and the standard of living that we enjoy. Well, these people, these bankers, couldn't stand to see all that money. They're looking at that as being money that's clogged up in a drain. They're looking at that as money that's being high-centered before it gets to them. That, like, we have taken something away from them because they're used to possessing the wealth. And that's exactly what happened in 1909. And since then, the government has gotten into bed with the Federal Reserve owners. The military-industrial complex has climbed into bed with them. The banking industry, of course, is owned and controlled by them to start with. And in your major industry and commerce, your big corporations, whether military, industrial, or otherwise, have also joined in because they are among the privileged. And that's why you see people like me being prosecuted for saying, show me a law and I'll file the tax. And yet you see somebody who actually lies on income tax returns and cheats on income tax returns gets a cabinet position appointment. Now, if that doesn't tell you that we have an emerging aristocracy in this country, what the Founding Fathers warned us about as an oligarchy, they called it, a ruling class, a ruling clique or group of people, then you got to be blind. If anybody who can't see that is happening, when you got Geithner being given a cabinet post and Tom Cryer being prosecuted, there's something wrong with that picture.
Yeah, they cheat on their liability and they get a cabinet post. You question your liability and you get prison, or at least that's what they try to send you.
Well, that's what I did an interview on Fox News back in February when I was up in Philadelphia doing one of these seminars that Truth Attack puts on for free, by the way. We do that so that groups, local groups, can raise funds and increase their membership. At that interview, a couple of the interviewers, and I don't even know who it was, I was drugged in there so fast, said something about, it was supposed to be about Geithner, but they got off on the case, and they got off on what is income, and they said, well, the guy says, well, if you raise that and tell the IRS that you don't have income, they'll put you in jail. I said, well, not everybody. I said, if you're among the privileged, you get a cabinet appointment. Wink, a nod, a grin, and a cabinet appointment. And, of course, they got a big kick out of that.
I think we're just about ready for a break, but what I'd like you to do, if you could, I actually had Phil Hart on my show, I think it was last week, and I wonder if you could walk the listeners through, you've kind of touched on it already, but as far as the word income and how it's not defined in the Internal Revenue Code, what the courts have said about it, and how that, you know, that definition and what it actually is so pivotal to this disagreement with the IRS about whether or not people owe the tax on their wages.
Oh, I have trouble doing that in 18 seconds, but basically,
we can come back.
Profit.
Let's see. Yeah, I think we're just about to start the break. Yeah, here it comes. Please, when we come back, I'd like you to just walk the listeners through that, because I think it's very instructive as to why we do these shows and why we say what we say, why we believe what we believe. Anyway, our guest is attorney Tom Cryer. We've got another segment coming up here before the end of the show. We really appreciate him joining us. Truthattack.org. Check it out during the break. We'll be right back.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap.
The entire world watch. They watch each step down the rungs of that small ladder, one after another, and waited with great anticipation for that last step.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
At that moment, humanity saw the impossible become the possible, and today the sky is not the limit. Achievement. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
America, born to freedom.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. FreedomAboveFortune.com. Our guest is
attorney Tom Cryer, and he's been with us for both hours. We're thankful for that. Before the break, I made a request that he's going to fulfill. Just give a brief thumbnail about the word income. They call it an income tax, and the IRS is constantly talking about income, and so we need to know, what income is. And so Tom's going to explain that and how he knows what the definition is. So please, Tom, go right ahead.
Well, the first time that the Supreme Court defined income was in the case of Stratton's Independence v. Halbert in around 1911, and it was a corporate excise tax. And they said that it was profit or gain derived from capital or labor, or capital and labor combined. Now, how do I derive income? Well, we weren't sure. So the next case was the Dole v. Mitchell Brothers, and they said, well, no, the IRS was, or this was on the income tax. And Dole said, no, government, you're wrong. This it is not what comes in. What comes in is called gross proceeds, what we now call gross receipts. But gross proceeds, what comes in was never, ever intended to be included in the term income. Then we learn about derived from. They say you have to first deduct and make yourself whole from before the transaction. You have to restore your capital. Well, how do you restore? I'm going to just jump a few chapters here. How do you restore your lost time and effort and energy, whenever you work for somebody else? How do you put that back? Can you go to the preacher or the priest and say, hey, I sold last week, but I want it back. How much of this money that I got for it can I give you to get it back? And he's going to have to tell you, unless, of course, he's a television, guy, fundraiser guy, that no amount of money is going to allow me to give you that week back. Now maybe, Tammy Faye or one of those bunch would say, I think 50% will cut it, But most will tell them, no, you can't ever put that week back. It's gone. It's forever gone. It's out of your life now. You sold it, it can't be restored. And not for any amount of money, let alone just for what you received for it. So did you receive any profit or gain in your wages? Did you get overpaid? If you did, how much? Well, then you have the next case that Eisner versus McComber, which makes it clear that if you can't identify exactly how much of that gross receipts was profit, then you can't call any of it income. And that's where we are. And, so income is only the profit or gain. When Walmart, we used that analogy earlier, they take in millions of dollars every day. But that isn't, the IRS doesn't call that income. It only calls that very small segment at the top, their profit margin, their profit, their gain. After, making themselves whole, after paying them back for the cost of their goods, for the cost of sales, for the overhead, after they pay themselves back and make themselves whole, whatever is left over is the income. But what about the poor guy who's standing there at the door greeting everybody? Well, they're saying that everything that he receives is 100% profit. Well, we know that's not true, and there's absolutely no law that allows them to do that. So they just—it's a rogue agency that has redefined income just by calling it that, calling it that, calling it that. And my good buddy from law school, I graduated with James Kerrville, proved in 1992 that—and this has been proven time and time again before—that if you tell a lie enough times, people will start to believe it, even though it's a lie. Well, the fact is it works both ways. We just have to start telling the truth. And if you tell the truth enough times, people will start to believe it, even though it's the truth. And so that's where we are on the income. Did I answer that, Joe, or did I make more confusion?
No, you did very well. And I just, you know, the listeners who return every week, and I may have heard Phil Hart last week, I just wanted, them to hear from a seasoned attorney as to what, you know, how you paint the picture for them. But, you know, the bottom line is that the IRS is lying to the public. They're deceiving the public. A lot of the agents just don't know better, you know, in terms of knowing the definition of income or looking into it. Their bosses at the IRS tell them that, you know, anything other than getting the person getting their checkbook out and writing a check is frivolous and a waste of time.
Yep. Well, you know, it's an interesting note, I think, to add to that, is that in Eisner, you know, people look for a definition of income in the code, and the IRS points at 61, and it says gross income shall mean all income from whatever source derived, including compensation for services, and they say that means that compensation for services is income. Well, to begin with, gross income shall mean all income doesn't define income. It just says income is income. But then they overlook the portion that says from whatever source derived. Now turn that around and put it in English, and it says the same thing, derived from compensation for services. Now, let's put that in something that people can understand, because it's in our households. Fruit juice is all juice from whatever fruit derived, including apples, oranges, so on. Now, does that mean that an apple is fruit juice? Of course not. So does Section 61 mean that compensation for services is income? Of course not. It's the very same thing. The Supreme Court in Eisner said that the reason, and this explains why there is no definition of income in the code. The Supreme Court in Eisner said that Congress is not allowed to define income because it's a constitutional term now. And so, therefore, only the Supreme Court can define the word income. And so the Supreme Court has defined it as profit or gain that is derived from, not still mixed in with, not stuck to, but derived from, separate apart, and able to be used, identified as profit and gain after restoring the capital. And so, clearly, wages don't meet that. Wages, salary, bonuses, things that you've earned through your own labor, your own effort, your own exertion, cannot possibly be income.
Now, were you able to, during your trial, were you able to talk about that, the definition of income?
Yeah, and the way I explained it there is it's kind of like pasteurized and homogenized milk. I don't know if any of your listeners are old enough, like you and I are, to remember when we had pasteurized and homogenized. And pasteurized, the cream would rise and separate. And we could separate the cream from the milk and still have our milk. We always poured the top off into a creamer so that we'd have cream. But homogenized, it's mixed up to the point to where it doesn't ever separate. And so you cannot pour the cream off of it. Well, wages are like that. You cannot define what part of your earnings are profit and what part is capital. And that's why the IRS has to say that your earnings are 100% profit, that there's no capital. But that is so patently and self-evidently false that I don't understand how the public sits back and takes it, because I don't give nothing in exchange for my fees. I work my butt off. And not only that, but I make a big difference in my clients' lives. You know, I give them something in exchange for that fee. I give them all I can give.
And it's also contradictory, right? Because if you talk to the IRS about a basis for a piece of machinery that you bought or basis or cost for some kind of product that's being sold, they understand
They say it's because you didn't pay for your own labor. Well, I didn't get it from the government. I got my labor from my abilities, my talents from God. I didn't get it from the government. That's another reason they've got to kill God. But it's one of those things where they step on themselves coming back. In other words, they meet themselves coming back because they'll tell you, well, it's because you didn't pay for it. Well, you didn't pay for an inheritance either. But the basis for an inheritance is the value as time that you inherited it. So you don't have to. That's a gain. That's an inheritance is an accession to your will, as they like to say. Anything that adds to your bottom line. But in a trial that I tried down in Florida in February, where the court ruled that my client did not commit any crime by refusing to file federal returns for the last 10 years. On cross-examination, the CPA who was testifying for the state said that he couldn't give me a single basis for his zero basis. He couldn't give me any explanation for calling this income, and he couldn't cite a single case that said that it was, because he wanted to cite these lower court cases, which are they're running around like a bunch of chickens with their heads cut off. But that's not law. The only body that has a right to define income is the Supreme Court. They've said so. And these other courts aren't the Supreme Court. And besides that, what was income and what wasn't, whether wages were income, was not really before the court. They're issuing these fiat saying, yeah. And it's not law. Not authoritative at all. It only applies, even according to the Internal Revenue Service's manual, those court cases aren't binding on the IRS. They're only applicable to the parties involved and only then for the years involved.
Yeah.
I'll ask you, is that correct?
I remember seeing that in their literature, that they have that caveat. Well, Tom, we only have a few minutes left, but can you tell the listeners briefly about the Notorious Notebook and maybe some other ways that they can find out about your court case and all the dirty tricks that the government tried, and you were still acquitted despite all the dirty tricks?
Well, not in 5 minutes I can't, but I'll tell you what, the Notorious Notebook is a compilation of quotes and excerpts that I had in front of me because I wasn't sure I could trust my memory under the heat, but as it turned out, I didn't need it, and I was able to quote verbatim these court cases and statutes without, any difficulty, without having to refer to it. But the court at the end of my testimony was so ticked off, because it obviously made a major impression on the jury, that he ordered us to turn that notebook over. Now, this is protected stuff. As having been involved in many cases before, that work product in preparation for trial is a very highly protected, highly privileged information. And our entire game plan was in that notebook. So the court ordered us to turn it over to the government before they cross-examined me the next morning. And we did that gladly because we knew it would totally demoralize them, and it did. My cross-examination didn't last a half hour. It should have gone on for 2 or 3 hours minimum. But he didn't touch anything. He knew better.
So, no good deed goes unpunished. They broke the law by taking your work product to something that's off limits to them, your playbook, so to speak, and it ended up ruining their day even more.
Yeah, now, we wanted to put the transcript. A lot of people were saying, could you put the transcript up on a Truth Tech website? We'd love to, but they didn't have $1,600. I was busted. I was in a hole. I'm still in a hole digging out of the crater. But, somebody suggested that, hey, I'd give $50 to see what was in that notebook. So we scanned it on. He said, just about 50. You just need 31 more and you got 1,600.
Tom, we got about 10, 15 seconds. So you can go to truthattack.org and see more about the Notorious Notebook and donating to Truth Attack.
A $50 donation, and we send them a copy on disc. A whole lot more on
LibertyWorks Radio Network.
Thanks, everybody. See you next week.
Was nurtured in the beginning by Thomas Jefferson, one of the greatest defenders of liberty in our history.